Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening. Tonight we'll be talking with Professor Mike Kreiza of Penn State University and Professor Gary Kaskowitz of Moravian College about new models for leadership and culture in an age of innovation and entrepreneurship. First of all, let me say welcome to Gary and Mike. Between now and mid-century, the human family will have to manage unprecedented social, environmental, and economic challenges. The consequences of robotics and artificial intelligence, climate change, the likelihood of more failed states, and population growth that will take us to 10 billion people on planet Earth by mid-century. We need new organizational and leadership models for such a high-stakes future. Increasingly, the quality of an organization's culture, not the quality of the product or service or the processes by which those products and services are created, is seen as the only available long-term sustainable competitive advantage that an organization can develop. Culture is critical. Getting culture right for the future requires a serious injection of entrepreneurial and innovative attitudes and skills into organizations and into our economy as a whole. An entrepreneur is someone who assumes the risks inherent in starting a new organization, and an innovator is someone who finds a better way of doing something and persists through the change process to make that insight a reality. In June, I interviewed Dr. Mark Lang, former executive director of the Ben Franklin Partnership, and now a consultant to entrepreneurs and an advocate for K-12 educational change, and also Mr. Steve Berner, a CEO of Hatch House, a residential business incubator in South Bethlehem, about the state of entrepreneurship and innovation in our region and in the nation. Although both had some important messages for our educational establishment, they spoke from their perspectives as practitioners of entrepreneurship and innovation. So this evening, I have two excellent educators with me, Professor Gary Kaskowitz, former head of the Department of Economics and Business and now the Dean of the School of Arts, Humanities, and Social Science at Moravian College, and Mr. Michael Kreiza, Professor of Management and Marketing at Penn State Lehigh Valley, to discuss some of the things that their respective institutions are doing to prepare students for a future in which innovation and entrepreneurship will play a huge role. Mike, Gary, welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay. Gary, let's start with you. What are some of the skills, attitudes, knowledge, experiences that you and your colleagues at Moravian see as being really important to developing leadership for what's clearly a fast-boil future of relentless change? What do employers tell professors that they need in newly minted graduates? What are some of the things that Moravian is doing in programs, events, through its curriculum and extracurricular activities to promote the capacities that students will need to initiate and manage new projects or even create new organizations? Where are you folks on this map, in other words?
Well, thank you, Gavin. That's a very interesting question. And first of all, I want to say I really appreciate how you are talking about the ideas of entrepreneurship and leadership and innovation all as a commingled sort of entity. To my mind, they really are not separable. You have to have them in cohesion with each other. And to answer your question about that, at Moravian College, we're looking at lots of different ways to understand and take advantage of this sense of integration. The integration I'm talking about is more than entrepreneurship in the more traditional sense that people think about. Oftentimes, when people say entrepreneurship, they will come back and say, oh, it's merely to start a business or create a type of business that never existed before. And while that is a very important part of entrepreneurship, that is not necessarily the way we like to envision it at the college. We like to think of it more along the lines of entrepreneurial spirit and entrepreneurial thinking, where anybody in their capacity of living their life or working on a job can take the skills of creativity, innovation, leadership, the things that you're talking mm-hmm. about, understand the culture that they work within, and adapt to that accordingly. So a student, for example, who takes a course in entrepreneurship may never start a business and, in fact, probably will not. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that they will not be at an employer where they will be asked to take upon a role which require vision, creativity, collaboration, all these things we try to encourage. And with that being the case, we like to think that we have a lot of offerings along those lines to help it. As you know, we are a liberal arts institution, and with that philosophy, what that means to us is that we really want that notion of integration and collaboration in all aspects of a student's life to build upon foundations, to build upon the classics, as you were talking about earlier, that sense of we can take these ideas and help you react to a world which is going to change.
How many of these ideas are coming from Moravian faculty? How much is in response to what business leaders are telling you folks they need in newly minted graduates?
It's pretty half and half, if you will. The faculty are coming with ideas, but we talk very closely with business leaders and through the community, the business community. And the one thing we do know from potential employers is that they are looking for students who can walk into the workforce and be able to work as part of an organization, to be able to work as part of a team, who are willing to challenge when they need to be challenged, who aren't just necessarily going to follow and become the robot you're speaking of, because in all truth, robots will exist more and more. And if that's all your skill sets entail, then that's not going to bode very well for you.
True. And are there some courses or conferences or workshops or any events coming up at Moravian that be of interest? And what about the co-curriculum as well as the formal curriculum?
Absolutely. What we try to do is to look very closely both within the college and throughout the entire community of Bethlehem and beyond. And we put together various types of symposium and different types of initiatives that we're striving toward. So, for example, this particular semester, I'm teaching a course on entrepreneurship where we're going to have an event on November 20th, and people mark your calendars because it will be open to the public.
Okay.
And it's an entrepreneurship symposium. It's the second annual one we're doing like this, where we will have students who are in a course work with mentors, work with business professionals throughout the development. They're going to have a case competition, and we're going to have for the community a panel of experts, a panel of entrepreneurs and business people to talk about what it means, how to have the spirit in your life and in the workforce. And we're going to have that very tight collaboration, again, on November 20th, which I think will be really exciting.
And are any of those panelists Moravian alumni?
Mostly will be. However, it's, again, we're looking for alums because we want to show the continuance of education. And so what we're working with the students is there'll be alums. Mm-hmm. There'll be graduate students on our MBA program working with the undergraduate students to help mentor them and to help be judges and to help give feedback. We're looking across departments, so it's not just business. But, for example, they will work with our art department to help develop what makes a good graphical presentation when you're trying to convey an idea through a poster or something else. Work with outside members to take in opportunities like how do you present to an audience, working with local theater companies to give them professional acting skills, all that sort of stuff to culminate in this event.
Very good. Very good. Mike, let's turn to Penn State Lehigh Valley. And I guess the same questions. What are you folks focusing on in terms of skills and experiences for undergraduates? Are there special activities and so on going on at Penn State that are worthy of sharing? Certainly, I would like you to talk to our listening audience about the Launchbox initiative. Tell us about some things that are happening at Penn State, Mike.
Well, there's a lot of things happening at Penn State, Lehigh Valley, and Penn State as a whole. One of the interesting things, a story to start out with, is in Lehigh County this year, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of Penn State Ag Extension here. We had the second Ag Extension person in the Lehigh Valley, in the whole Penn State system. And the job of Ag Extension and our mission was to help farmers become more entrepreneurial and more conservative with the environment and everything else. And fast-forwarding it to today, the first Ag Extension agent was a guy by the name of Mr. Hacker. When he retired, he had 4,000 people attend his retirement party for teaching them how to be entrepreneurial. And you mentioned Lehigh Valley Launchbox, which is a new initiative here. We have his grandson, William Hacker, as the head of our entrepreneurial thing here. So talk about something coming full circle. Like Gary was saying, it's important in the continuum to have alumni involved in things. So that's just a little thing.
That's remarkable. Yeah.
Our new president, Eric Barron, he came in 3 years ago, and last year, you know, we always have this little budget battle going back and forth with the legislature, and he says, look, I'm going to take $30 million out of our endowment, and I'm going to call it Invent Penn State, you know, and, you know, we want to show the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that we can be inventive and add to the economic development and have retain our college grads within the confines of the Commonwealth. And part of Invent Penn State, he put out a grant request and to the 23 campuses that are involved and 18 responded, and we were one of the first six funded to establish an off-site incubator, which we call now Lehigh Valley Launch Box, and it's in downtown Allentown between 5th and 6th on Hamilton in the Velocity Building, along with other companies incubating. But, you know, going back to your original thought here about creating a culture of what I call a culture of an entrepreneurial mindset. Gary points out that not everybody's going to be an entrepreneur, but whether you're a doctor or a lawyer or a psychiatrist, you're going to have to be entrepreneurial and innovative. You know, maybe in our generation we call it a MacGyver, how you can solve things on the spot, you know, and problems that you don't even know exist are going to be confronted with you. So I think what President Barron tried to do is lay the gauntlet down that we are going to establish an entrepreneurial mindset across the entire Penn State University system, including alumni and all the campuses. And then down here on our campus in Center Valley, LaunchBox is part of it. But with our new Chancellor, Tina Richardson, we're started, and we just started last week with our freshmen. We call it a Metamorphose Project. So we're involving our incoming 240-plus freshmen in their first year experience to come up with ways of re-envisioning our campus. Okay, so you take an existing space and do something innovative and creative. And everything's up for grabs. You know, obviously there's a risk management and a cost-benefit analysis that has to be done but at the end. But for the time being, we have 10 first-year experience classes, and they will be divided into four teams each. And they have to come up with a project to re-envision something on their own, to get them thinking this way. And we've given them, the teachers of these class, things on creativity and how to get people to start thinking in this project. So that's an important part of establishing a culture. So yes, we got a launch box culture first, and we've in our first round, which we funded in December, we funded 13 projects.
Now, forgive me for interrupting, Mike. The point is, you got some grant money from University Park.
Yeah, we got some grant money from University Park, and we got some corporate partners that also kicked in some money here, and we awarded $50,000 to 13 companies in the first round.
Who are those generous companies?
City Center is one of them. Heinzelman Funeral Home is another one. You say, well, why Heinzelman Funeral Home? Well, interesting there. They've been pretty innovative in their three generations to date. They have two funeral homes. They own the only crematorium in the Lehigh Valley that does 28 of the 30 funeral homes cremations. And you say, why is that important? Because 50% of them are funerals today are cremations. And his son, Matthew, and his twin sister will become fourth generation funeral directors. And Matthew came up with a philanthropic entrepreneurial project. He doesn't look to make any money off it, but he partnered with the Lehigh Valley Arts Council.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's called Eternally Art, which will be debuting sometime in mid-October, where artists will be invited and be commissioned to do customized cremation urns that reflect the lifestyle and the passion of the individual, both living or deceased. And Matthew and his sister want to use this as an opportunity to kind of demystify the life-death cycle for young people and also bring to bear that how funeral art has played from pyramids to crypts and everything throughout history. So there's an arts component to it, a philanthropic part to it, and money made off of this will benefit the Lehigh Valley Arts Council. Each individual artist entrepreneur can also benefit from this, so the ripple effect from it. And Penn State will get some scholarship funds for art in the future. So that's an exciting project has moved off on this. So the advisory board just got done funding another 17 projects, so now we're at 28, and it's interesting because each one of these have their own ecosystems and weather systems that are bringing attentions to the project and also to Penn State Lehigh Valley. Now, you mentioned that you had Steve Berner here last month from Hatch House. Well, he was one of our grant recipients, and we funded him out of a series of meetings that we held in my backyard with a bunch of geeks. Because one of the things I felt was, or we felt as well, is that I don't think an incubator and startup space should be geospecific. not in today's world where everybody's connected. So he's building out for what we're calling right now a virtual incubator network. He's going to have another branded name for that. And we've been seeing, we saw a beta test, and we're going to see another iteration of it next month, whereby we could put all of these 28 projects up on a internet platform, and people through LinkedIn can go and dynamically link to a project of Gary or the Heintzelman project, and each one of those people can control how much access and how much involvement they want in there. You know, the issue becomes, you know, eventually we're going to have 24 of these incubators across the Penn State system. And then we also have international partners. I had, you know, students over 2 years ago to the University of Utrecht in the Netherlands and talking on entrepreneurship, and we saw their incubator, and some of my students still keep in touch with them. So how can we partner with all these people? And the other benefit is in the Lehigh Valley alone, we have 13,000 plus alumni, Penn State alumni. So how do we connect them with this without having to go through Mike Krysa or some person? You know, the value is the network, and you can't look at a network as being one person in the hub. Every node in the network should be able to light up and integrate on their own, and that's what we're trying to do with this virtual incubator network.
Yeah, it's the difference between a node network on the one hand and an ecosystem on the other, and you're really clearly aiming to create that ecosystem.
Right. You know, and there's been so many benefits, you know, and I'm sure Gary would say the same thing when he gets with alumni. At Penn State Lehigh Valley, we have 9 majors that you can complete a 4-year degree at our campus. Penn State offers over 160 majors throughout, but you can complete 9 at our campus, and all 9 of them require an internship experience in the community. So Launchbox and the visibility that it has given our campus and, you know, the advisory board of 21, I have now more internship opportunities, I think, than we have students for people. And the nice thing is a lot of our students are getting internships freshman summer to sophomore summer. PPL, Talon, Air Products. These are traditionally internships you don't usually get until junior to senior summer. Okay, because internships are becoming very important, and that goes back to what Gary talked and what I talked about, creating an entrepreneurial mindset. You got to get in within these organizations and see how they function, and you know, and you bring what your talents bring to the table to add to that. So a lot of companies, when they go to hire somebody in their senior year, they want to make sure they were test-driven 3 or 4 times with some other internships. And the Launchbox has given us that opportunity to provide these opportunities for our students.
Mike, I think you may have a high school student or two involved.
Yeah, actually, Galen, it came out of we were talking to the Lehigh Valley
Indian American
Association. Yeah. 2 summers ago for a youth leadership conference, and then I get a LinkedIn from this young man. You know, I thought he was in college. It turns out that he was 15, and he wanted to talk to me, and his mother drove him to the campus, and we chatted for 3 hours, and then his father came and picked him up afterwards. I guess, okay, he's only 15 years old, but Ari Amon is a very interesting young man. He started a project that we funded, Good to Greater, and his aunt and uncle are physicians in India and work in a rural area, and they had trouble keeping track of biometrics of dealing with malnourished kids. So he developed an app for his iPad and sent it over there, and it's working. He's a philanthropic entrepreneur again.
A 15-year-old philanthropic entrepreneur.
And he's more than that, which we can come back to.
Okay. Well, that's a great story. We're going to take a short break. I'm talking with Professors Mike Krysa and Gary Kaskowitz about leadership, entrepreneurship, and organizational culture. I'm Galen Godbee, and this is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
For program support on WDIY, we thank ASAP Mailing of the Lehigh Valley, a locally owned and operated mailing and fulfillment company offering marketing and production solutions for your custom mail piece, taking your marketing project from idea to delivery, creating a program that meets your mailing, marketing, and fulfillment requirements. For more information, 484-285-0204 or asapmailing.com.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godbee, your host this evening, talking to Professors Gary Kaskowitz of Moravian College and Mike Krysa of Penn State Lehigh Valley about organizational leadership, culture, and entrepreneurship. Mike, I think you might want to add a word or two. Just before break, you were talking about a rather remarkable Indian-American student who, at the age of 15, is getting involved with entrepreneurship.
And Ariyaman Kandal, and he's at Parkland High School. So he developed this app to help his aunt and uncle, physicians in India, and to keep track of biometrics of malnourished children that they serve. And this November, he's taken six more iPads over there and going to do some field testing with them on top of that. But the nice thing about Ariyaman is that it comes back to what Gary and everybody said earlier. It's just not having an entrepreneurial mindset. It's having leadership and communication skills and everything else. And this past spring, Ariyaman won the local, regional, and state oratorical contest on the U.S. Constitution at the Forum in Harrisburg. And won $5,000 there. He's just a fantastic public speaker. President Barron had the original six launch boxes come up and do an Invent Penn State, each had 5-minute presentation. He went last, and with no notes, just no ahs, no ums, just nailed this blew this whole presentation away. And this summer we had a Lehigh Valley Launch Box Teen Entrepreneurial Challenge. We had our first entrepreneurship camp that we ran for 10 days. And it was interesting, we brought Ariyaman in because the camp was for rising juniors and seniors in high school. And here he's just going into junior year and was the youngest one. And he just got up and gave what would have been a perfect 20-minute TED Talk to these kids about why you should be an entrepreneur. You have nothing to lose. You're living at home. You know, you have no risk to do. And I think that's what, you know, I'm sure Gary teaches his students as well as I do. You know, it's like, this is the time of your life when you have the safety nets in place. So, you know, go take an idea and run with it. And to hear that coming out of a now 16-year-old mouth, that's pretty incredible, you know, and inspiring.
It really is indeed. Well, so we've been talking about some of the qualities that people need to succeed in the world ahead. Are there leaders in the business world or the nonprofit world that you think that you particularly admire, that you think embody some of these values and skills and capacities? Gary, who do you admire in a leadership sense these days?
Well, there's so many of them, Galen, but what I really like to do is, again, think back to some of the foundational principles that when you talk about leadership. And one of the key leaders I like to talk about in terms of entrepreneurial spirit is no longer with us, but I think a great example of it is Walt Disney. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of work on the Disney Corporation and Walt Disney World to talk about how they have, you know, developed their business and their marketing over the years. And the reason I like that is because you talk about a sense of leadership, a sense of culture, a sense of taking risks, et cetera, et cetera. And the Disney Corporation, especially in the early days, really typified that quite a bit. And I use that as an exemplar with a lot of my students in terms of not only did Walt Disney himself have the creativity and the spirit and creating a culture, but what happened was he also was recognizing he could not do it alone. So he partnered with his brother Roy, who actually brought in a bunch of talent that he did not have. He worked collaboratively, and they've created an entire culture around the Disney Corporation, especially at the resorts, where they talk about the culture of service, the culture of leadership, and they are very thorough in making sure all their employees are trained in their culture in simple manner, but a very profound manner as well. And I just think that's so critical that leaders have to have that mindset of vision applied to the society as long as creating a culture to support it.
Do I recall correctly that you take a group of students?
Absolutely, yes. Every January, I take a winter term trip to Walt Disney World. I take anywhere between 25 and 50 students with me, and we talk about how to do it. It is. But it's a great experience for them.
Okay.
Just building on your Disney experience, one of the things I think in helping students get an entrepreneurial mindset is embedded study abroads or trips like Gary's doing. And 2 years ago when we were in Peru, I took a group of business students down for an international business course. And we met with our U.S. ambassador at the embassy and his staff. And it was very interesting that the USAID guy came out, and who was a Penn State alum from the York campus, small world, and said that USAID had partnered with Disney. And they went into a village at 13,000 feet that was growing coca. And they eradicated the coca, and they, with a $5 million tax credit, environmental tax credit, the carbon tax credit that Disney had, they started planting coffee. And this is now coffee being grown in between Disney and USAID in this village, and they're using this coffee on the Disney mm-hmm. cruises and at the Disney resort. So your
Neat.
Idea about
Absolutely.
Walt Disney continuing down, I was just stunned by that whole partnership, which I thought was extremely good.
The partnerships are critical for anybody, as you well know, in entrepreneurship. It's, as I tell the students, they often think that it's a solo act. And the reality is, as we all know, it's not. It's always a team. You just may not, you may be the front person, but there's always got to be partnerships with people to help shore you up along the way and make partnerships throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. a few years ago, Gary Hamel, who at that time was the most frequently quoted business consultant in the world, according to the Wall Street Journal, Gary Hamel wrote a book called The Future of Management. He argued that the personal qualities that add strategic value to an organization are, in order of importance, passion first, passionate commitment to what you're doing, creativity, initiative, and intellectual skills, in that order. Adam Grant of the Wharton Business School at Penn a few years ago, a few years after Hamel's book came out, wrote a book called Give and Take, about reciprocity styles. There are givers, there are matchers. Matchers are people who operate on the basis of quid pro quo, or you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And there are takers. Givers are disproportionately highly represented among the very most successful people in the world. More recently, Matt Tenney wrote a bestseller called Serve to Be Great, in which he argued the case for servant leadership. The idea being that building organizations around the sincere desire to help others is, ironically, the most effective way to build a profitable, competitive company in this highly competitive world. So, Mike, Gary, passion for the organization's mission, willingness to give to others and to put their and to put your needs second, a service orientation. Do you see these as important parts of the leadership philosophies and strategies, strategies for success that you present to students? Or like Leo DeRocher, the manager of the old Brooklyn Dodgers, do you believe that nice guys finish last? Are these guys all naive? Are these authors all naive? What do you think?
I'll go first, if you don't mind. I agree with what you're saying, Galen, in terms of you can't just be out for yourself anymore, whether you want to or not, as Mike was pointing out before with the students and the work that they're doing. We live in a global world, and what we tend to do oftentimes is think from our own very biased, myopic perspective, mm-hmm. and we can't do that anymore. You just can't. Whether you want to or not, we have to recognize we live within a world where there are different cultures, different values, different structures, and you have to adopt the philosophy of trying to understand the other and other group, other culture you're living with, in addition to your own. If you're just out for yourself, that is not, in my experience, going to be a long-term success strategy. And in fact, as we talked about before, that's not what employers are looking for today anyway. They just don't want that. They want that collaboration. And actually, one more point, and now that Mike gives thoughts too, but I was just listening to a very interesting talk the other day about Gen Z, mm-hmm. which is people born in 1995 and after. Mm-hmm. And all the perspectives they have, how they differ from millennials, and the attitudes they want. And these are who you're educating today. Those are the students that are in our college, are the Gen Zs at this point. And they have a different perspective than a lot of the people who wrote these books, about nice guys finish last, you're in for yourself sort of thing. It doesn't work. They want to be collaborative. They want to be part of teams. They want to see a bigger picture in front of them. They may not, again, be that entrepreneur in the sense of I'm going to create something brand new, never existent, but they want to be part of that. And I think we have to recognize that in terms of the service orientation you're speaking of.
Yeah, I think for Gen Z, there is a very strong need for meaning through their mm-hmm. work, whether it's compensated work or voluntary work or whatever, but there's a very strong search for purpose and meaning. Yeah, Mike?
I couldn't agree with you more about Hamel and Grant's perspective. In terms of intelligence, China has more honor students that speak English, and India has more honor students that speak English than the United States has students.
Period.
Okay.
Yes.
So, so much for the intellectual skills. You need them. You need a good solid foundation in college, but the really differentiators in the long run are going to be your leadership skills, your teamwork skills, your passion for a project. And just as Gary says, you know, why do you take them to Disney? The creativity aspect, okay? And to get those things, you know, I don't have one person like Walt Disney that I would do just focus on. I've had so many good mentors and so many good ideas. And what I try to do with our students, and we did it with the summer camp, we had 40 different speakers come in and talk to them and took them on eight different field trips, you know. So you got to figure out of those 40, somebody's going to resonate with somebody within those things. So what I'm finding is it's not like our students just don't care or don't know. They just don't know what they don't know yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think as educators today, we not only have to expose them to the breadth of whatever the discipline that they're exploring, but we got to take down those silos and show them how, you know, you could be a bioengineer, and that's what GE Medical wants. They want bioengineers. They just don't want bio. They want engineer. And that gets back to the idea of teamwork and how do you communicate and cross-pollinate people's minds. And there is a challenge with this newer generation in getting them to work together. You know, they're the most connected generation, and they have all this information at their fingertips and all the answers at their fingertips. So that's where the oral and written communication skills and the leadership and the team building skills become very important, whether they're done face-to-face or through the virtual technology of collaboration that we do with various platforms in the business world or anywhere else today. That's the skill set they need to express their ideas and to express their passions and creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's pretty clear in our presidential election that globalization has become a bone of contention to a considerable extent. I know that both of you lead very popular courses in leadership at your respective institutions. Has globalization and the innovation and cultural awareness that it demands affected the way that you approach the issue of leadership and leadership development with your students? Are you pushing students to develop the international and intercultural competencies?
At Penn State Lehigh Valley, most definitely. We hope to have five embedded study abroad trips this March going to various countries. And most of the students that we take on these trips, half of them don't have passports, half of them never been on an airplane. So this is their first experience.
Yeah, this is big stuff.
And, you know, myself and the other professors on the trip, usually by day three or four, we can tell you the exact moment that I call it these kids popped out of their shells and begin to see themselves as somebody who's confident in themselves and navigating another culture and also beginning to see what other cultures have to offer. Because a lot of times when I take these trips, we have a relationship with another university and our students mix with other students. And then they begin to get, you know, the other students want to see what the perspective is of America. Usually starts out with sports, usually starts out with music, usually starts out with films and rock stars. And then we begin to get into other conversations of what's important to them. And it's very interesting for my students to see how students in another culture view America and what they do or don't do for them.
Yes.
You know, 'cause we kind of take things for granted here. But when they come back, they're changed. In fact, some parents will write me, "What'd you do to my son or daughter? I've been trying to get them to do something for 18 or 19 years. They go away for you for a week and they come back, you know, with a different perspective." And that's exactly what you want. You can't teach that. You can teach the course. You can teach everything, but you can't teach that. You have to experience that.
They have to experience that. Yeah. Gary, any thoughts?
Oh, exactly. Mike's absolutely right with this. You cannot ignore intercultural competence today and the notion of international aspects that it has on all of our lives. At Moravian, we have very similar programs. We have a lot of study abroad courses. We are working for an initiative to get every student some form of international experience that you have that to take with, because you have to understand these cultures, as Mike's referring to. The whole notion of, you know, just totally isolationist, it doesn't fly whether you want it to or not. It's just not going to work. And so we have to support that. It reminds me, actually, I was reading this interesting book about how to be an effective leader today based on the classics, which I want to refer to later. But they make this point here. One of the dimensions that people talk about is, you know, how do you approach a decision? Is it from a rules-based perspective or a relationship-based perspective?
Right.
And we in the States are very much rules-based oriented, where you follow the rules, you follow the hierarchy, you go to court, you testify to the rules, blah, 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 blah. and other countries, they're much more on the relationship. And when you have these culture clashes like that, you know, how could you turn your best friend in for something that's your best friend? And that, you know, we don't fathom that from our perspective, but other people and other cultures will say, how can you follow the rule when your best friend's going to be harmed by what you just did? And so, as Mike's saying, the more you get these experiences and people, our students can talk to other people across cultures, it's critical. They walk away with this new profound insight that they probably never had before.
Yeah.
And so it's absolutely essential.
Yeah, well, I know both of these institutions are working very hard also to bring students from other countries
absolutely
to the campus. And that's a process that requires very significant adjustment and tact and really a kind of discipline on the part of all concerned. But it's something that just absolutely has to happen and be part of this. Mike, you were going to make a point?
Yeah, we have 38 different ethnicities and cultures on our campus, mm-hmm. and we just got designated as an international campus from Penn State. So we have 12 foreign students now for the first time this year. And it's just great to see them all mixing and talking and getting along, and there's actually no barriers or no tension that's there. You know, I can see it in my business society, and I just think that's good. But internationalization is just not at study abroad. One of our sociology teachers, Dr. Parker, started an immigrant entrepreneur dinner program. So these are immigrant entrepreneurs okay. that own restaurants, and we've
right.
gone
mm-hmm.
some of our students' families own these
car washes.
So we go to the restaurants, Dominican, Persian, and Syrian already, and we have five set up for this year, and it's faculty, staff, and we sponsor students, and we go there, and the immigrant owner entrepreneur tells their story. They put out a meal, and they tell about the traditions and everything, and we can ask them about what their struggles, what their challenges are, and it's a great time for faculty, staff, and students to get together and also learn about another culture through food.
Yeah. Let me, if I may, offer a couple of my own experiences. You were talking about how important it is for kids to be in another country and be immersed in that country and to be away from the U.S., I will never forget the first time I was in India, and I was sitting waiting for my colleague to go out for a business meeting, and he was not feeling very good and was a little slow getting ready, so I had the time to read an entire newspaper, the Hindu newspaper, from front to back. And when I finished up the newspaper, I realized that there had not been a single mention of the United States in that entire newspaper, and it was about a 40-page newspaper. Newspapers are still big things in India. That was an important moment, in a way, for me as an American. Did I see, you know, we had this tendency to think that we are at the center of everything. We have guests from Moravian and from Penn State today. Cedarcrest College just had a nice note in the local media. Apparently, a benefactor, I think, who is anonymous, has given enough money to take the entire freshman class for
yes.
an international experience. We're going to take a short break. I'm talking with Professors Mike Kreiza and Gary Kaskowitz about leadership, entrepreneurship, and organizational culture. I'm Galen Godby, and this is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening, talking to Mike Kreiza of Penn State University and Gary Kaskowitz of Moravian College about leadership, organizational culture, entrepreneurship, and innovation. So if we are encouraging our students to develop ideas for organizations and new services and to take initiative on those new ideas, is the U.S. government policy and or the economy actually designed to encourage such efforts? Robert Reich, a former U.S. Secretary of Labor and now Stanford economics professor, in his new book called Saving Capitalism for All of Us, Not Just the Few, argues that large corporations are buying up or otherwise trying to suppress startups so that these corporate behemoths can avoid competition and just coast on their current products. Is this a serious issue? And if you think it is, what do you say to students about it? Are we becoming anti-competitive within our economy? And how does that, we're here saying, go out and start your own businesses. But there seem to be a large number of corporations that really have a kind of predatory attitude about, small businesses and potential competitors. What do you think, guys?
I think, that's what you read in the news a lot because it's big. But there's also things like the Affordable Health Care Act, which keeps students on their parents' insurance to age 25. That gives them a 3 to 4 year start on an entrepreneurship program. Mm-hmm. I think, the retirement of the baby boomers that are coming out there and with the health that they enjoy today, that creates another wave of entrepreneurs, whether it's philanthropic entrepreneurship, giving back to nonprofits and taking their talents and going forward that way. That's another opportunity there. And just the communication and the things that are available in the world today to come up with new ideas and collaborations among young people. That's an environment that wasn't there 5 or 10 years ago. So maybe in the past we used to put this emphasis on government, and I'm sure some people would argue that there's some rules and regulations that they would like to eliminate, and there's also some rules and regulations we would like to see come down, particularly on the environment and things like that for future generations to save this planet. But what it comes down to is still the individual about how passionate, innovative, and creative you are about what you want to do. And if you have that ability, you can find the people to help you make that happen.
And if I may add a point to that, because I agree with that perspective, and I would also say that there's truth to this. However, it's not necessarily new truth in the sense of competition's always existed and that you've always had larger competitors try to squash the smaller ones, if you will. And that's been how business has operated for centuries, if not more. The thing I always talk to our students about whenever we teach this, though, is there's a book that I'm sure you both have read about being a category of one. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of if you are successful, entrepreneurial-minded, that sense of where your vision is, your passion, what you want to call achieving your life. Again, doesn't have to necessarily start a business, but that notion of what skill set do you bring to your job, do you bring to your employer, does your employer or your corporation bring to the market? As I would always teach in my marketing classes, if you're a category of one, by definition, you have no competition. Mm-hmm. And so as Mike is saying, if you can get that sense of what is it you're truly all about uniquely, passionately, that's one of the ways you mitigate this, because competition is a reality and always will be.
And that's sort of the idea behind Blue Ocean Strategy,
right?
The idea of not competing with others, but creating new space where there is no competition through innovation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of corporations have entrepreneurship teams and opportunities for employees within. And we had some speakers at our summer challenge from Boss Rex Roth. And the gentleman that spoke was about 32, and he developed an idea that was then pitched to Boss Rex Roth globally. And I guess there were 100 some in the pitch, and he was one of 18 funded. And so he still has his regular job to do, but if this new business unit develops, then he would be in charge of that, and there's rewards. I mean, the IP belongs to Bosch, but he's the guy who innovated that. So corporations are looking for people to do that, and our career services has been having some conversations with several corporations where we've had interns there, and now they want to make it a little more formal. They would like to get 3 or 4 to work on one of their entrepreneurship teams, because they're stuck in whatever corporate world they're in, and my students have things that they know, but they don't have no place to apply it. And if you kind of mesh those together over a semester in a quasi co-op team type of situation, they want to see what that dynamic sparks. And it's also a way for them to test drive four or five of our students to see if they fit into that environment.
Okay. So in any organization, there are three areas in which you can have innovation. Innovation in the product or service itself. Innovation in the process by which the product or service is created. And innovation in organizational culture, structure, decision-making, power distribution, etc. Of these three, the most important may well be innovation in culture, the values of and the ways things are done within an organization. This is largely because innovation in product or process can be copied, but innovation in culture is very difficult to copy. When Jack Welch was CEO at General Electric, he used to permit teams from competing firms to visit GE's plants. He knew that they might be able to describe the GE culture, but that changing their own firm's culture would take years of struggle. So if culture is so important, and if it takes time and persistence to create a healthy, dynamic organizational culture, and if that culture should reflect the interests of all parties involved, what are the leadership qualities we need for this kind of environment? Does the traditional command and control quasi-military model make sense for this kind of world? What does a controlling, authority-based management style say about how the organization views human nature or the merits of its own employees? Is it likely to encourage innovation or risk-taking? That is, does the old command and control model encourage innovation and risk-taking? Gary?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Galen. And I think the command and control model, we have to balance this with some things we've already discussed and the notion of who are we trying to command and control, if you will. There's a certain percentage of the workforce that, frankly, would thrive on that. That's what they're used to. That's what they desire. However, I don't think that's the type of people we're talking about today, the young people coming up through college who will be going out there and starting their own enterprises, or at least working within an enterprise to help advance it in a creative, innovative, entrepreneurial fashion. And with that being the case, this type of spirit would not really react well to a command and control model at all. Again, as we talked about the habits of and demographics, would suggest that these younger people coming up through, you know, up into the workforce now have a whole different model. They've lived their entire life. And so to tell them you will do X by this date, yes, direction is important, but teamwork and that notion for working towards something bigger is more important. And so as you're pointing out, when corporate cultures collide, that can be a real problem. If you have a company full of people who share the passion of I'm working towards something bigger than ourselves, and we're working towards this idea, this notion, and you come in with, you will now do X by this date, that probably will backfire in your face real, real fast. And it is hard to change corporate cultural mindsets, probably one of the most challenging things, as you point out.
Yeah. Mike?
I agree with Gary and yourself, Galen, that the culture is the most important thing. And my experience in teaching for 12 years at the college level has, if I had to put it down into one word, it's encouragement. You know, so you got to find somebody with that comes to you and has an idea or a concept, and you encourage them either by connecting them with your networks. Sometimes it's a self-confidence issue that you have to do it. But, you know, you got to create it's a can-do thing. And I think those individuals in any organization who can say, yes, you can do it, yes, we can do it, yes, we can be this way, that culture spreads very quickly, okay, on a positive side. Just like the old command and control, you know, when you get chewed out by a boss, you get to the water cooler, that's not good. Or you walk into a business and say, what mood is the boss in today? You know, that's just a negative thing to happen. And interestingly, I teach a leadership and motivation course on Penn State's World Campus. So I have 30 students in the class, and they're from all over the world, different cultures, and a lot of military. And I only use one command and control thing, the leadership lessons of Colin Powell, which are a pretty powerful list. I also use Lee Iacocca, a talk that he gave on about how to do some things. But the response from my military people, they said, man, I've had leadership training all throughout my career, 20 years, 15, whatever, but I never had leadership and motivation things like you're sharing with me here in this course. And I'm really learning a lot out of it. And the types of things we're talking about are, you know, the creating that type of culture and creating encouraging environments for people to perform well as collaborators and team members.
Yeah. You know, if you're going in to consult with an organization and you want to take the temperature of the organization and with respect to morale at a given moment, I mean, the first thing to listen for is whether people at quote-unquote lower levels of the organization refer to the organization as them or us or we. Mm-hmm. When you know they don't listen to us, when it's they and us, it's all over. I would guess, Gary, that people who are doing people who are working in command and control environments probably have their work designed for them in ways that will make them highly vulnerable to replacement by robots and artificial intelligence and automation and algorithms faster than people who are given more discretion and actively solicited for input into ideas and expected to generate.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you have that type of structure, by definition, you're setting yourself up for a replacement by somebody else who can do it cheaper or by machine.
Yeah.
There's that, you're losing that creative spark, that innovation we've been talking about for this past hour.
Yeah.
Without that innovation, it is, you're just opening up yourself and your company to total replacement by another product, another service, or another, you know, group.
Yeah. A point not to be missed is that China is now the world's largest purchaser of industrial robots. It's really an interesting thing for all of us to watch. So increasingly, people seem to be aware of the importance of worker motivation and the fact that business has historically assumed that money is virtually the only or certainly the best way to motivate workers. Many critics argue that assuming workers are being paid decently, and that's a very important assumption, assuming workers are being paid decently, they want much more out of their work than a paycheck. Dan Pink, in his book Drive, about in the power of intrinsic motivation, argues that workers want a sense of mastery for their work, autonomy, or at least a big voice in deciding how, when, and where the work gets done, and a sense of purpose from their work. So how do you see these issues, and how does your position affect your view of organizational culture and your approach to leadership education?
I'll go then. This is a very interesting question, Galen, and you are right. Money, you have to meet the baseline, obviously. If someone's starving, then all bets are off. But assuming somebody...
And if they are starving, they will work just for money. They will be motivated
absolutely.
By money. Yeah, yeah.
But that aside, most people aren't in that category oftentimes. And with that being the case, it's my experience that people work more for meaning than for money. Mm-hmm. And that is what is really motivating somebody. You've been discussing here today and the work that and all the colleges are doing in that regard. How do you create the meaning for yourself? How do you create the meaning for what you're going to do, for what makes you want to get up and go to work? You know, at Moravian College, we look at different ways to help with this meaning creation. We're working on different things to say there's meaning to your life. We're working on something we call the Accelerator Lab, which mm-hmm. ties together all the different aspects of the humanities, the arts, the social sciences, the physical sciences, natural sciences, saying how does this all create a meaning for yourself? You know, you get a job, you work, that's great, but in 10 years, you're going to have a job that we probably don't even know what it is today. So how do you have a life that's going to craft not only the ability to make the money you need, but to have a meaningful life in the process, because in my opinion, that is what's truly motivating people, how to discover that meaning and get it for yourself while contributing meaning back to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mike, thoughts?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, that's what this new generation wants. They want a meaningful life, but they don't know what that life is yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think our job as educators is just not giving them the educational tools to that, but you have to give them the personality development tools to help navigate, you know, their generation. And when they get out in the real world, they're going to be dealing with three or maybe four different generations in the same in cultural environment. And so how do you communicate with those individuals and interact with them and respect them? So I guess what you come down to is, you know, what my parents taught us is, you know, the thing that nobody can ever take away from you is your character.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to help these individuals not only find their passion and their creativity, but do it in an ethical way that their character and reputation, no matter what job they switch to in the thing, that precedes them. You know, he or she's a worker. He or she's a team player. She's a team leader. He or she is on time all the time. All the basic things, okay? But those are the things that make a culture work or not work. You know, and the understanding that we talked about earlier of working with people from different environments and different cultures and different perspectives and what that brings to the team.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that Matt Tenney says on this issue is kind of interesting in his book, Served to Be Great. is that people who have considerable empathy for other people actually are probably more likely to contribute to innovation than people who don't. People who are thinking about other people and serving other people will begin to look for, to identify the needs that people have, the problems that they're facing. And when you do that analysis, it may begin to spark some ideas for how you can help those people with those problems, you know, or to meet those needs. So empathy may play a significant role in the imagination that precedes the creativity and the innovation as well. So so how does all of this discussion relate to our topics about innovation and entrepreneurship, about motivation, for example? Are there examples that you could share with our listeners of highly innovative or successful companies or nonprofit organizations that do invest seriously in training their employees, that give them a big voice in how goals are met, and that help them find purpose in their employment?
There's a lot of companies out there that I believe are doing it right, if you will. And it comes back to what we've been talking about, this whole notion of helping people discover for themselves how they fit into not only the company's purpose, but their own purpose along the way. So I already talked about Disney before, but another company which everyone is familiar with, which I think does a really nice job with this, is like Apple Corporation. What I consider some of the more creative companies, I was at the Apple store a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to one of the employees there. He was telling me about how they all get $5,000 a year just to pursue education of whatever they want to learn to help them discover their passions. And I just think that's so interesting that you get trained not only in your corporate culture, your corporate way of doing things, what the company's all about, but that notion of, hey, it's a big road out there. Keep learning, keep exploring, because that's going to come back to serve us as well.
It gives them latitude and discretion. And
right.
People really value that. Mike?
I remember years back, teaching a marketing course, I used Timberland as an example because the day you come in and be hired, they pay more. You go through a vetting process, and you're going to have 2 weeks vacation and 2 weeks sick. And oh, by the way, we're going to give you a week off to do any community service that you want. If you want to coach a soccer team and leave an hour early from work, fine. But they give you that extra week of community service, which creates a whole corporate culture of giving back.
We've enjoyed a very rich discussion this evening with Professor Gary Kaskowitz, now Dean Kaskowitz of Moravian College, and Professor Michael Kreise of Penn State Lehigh Valley, about innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, and organizational culture. Thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.